Good evening, friends. Welcome to Valley Writers Read, a program where only folks from right here in the Central Valley get to read their original stories. Sometimes they write fiction, sometimes nonfiction, sometimes science fiction, and oftentimes memoirs. Some stories are funny, some sad, some informative, some touching, some even tragic. But tonight we're featuring Bakersfield author Nelson Varin reading a really dramatic, true-to-life story called Fixing Things. And so now, without any further ado, here's Nelson Varin reading his story, Fixing Things.
Fixing Things. The clock on the dash of his Chevy truck read 10 minutes to 10 when he got to the parking lot that morning. He had just enough time to make his 10 o'clock meeting at the production offices of the country's largest publisher of do-it-yourself books and magazines. Whoa, is this an ugly place or what? He parked about 50 feet from the entrance to the building marked with the simply lettered sign, Hauser Publications. The concrete block walls of the building were stained by decades of particulate deposited from black and yellow smoke which belched from tall chimneys, piercing the skies above countless refineries. This dingy-looking structure, in a grimy industrial park in Secaucus, New Jersey, was in stark contrast to the glamorous corporate offices just across the Hudson River amid the sophisticated energy of Madison Avenue. It was there, in the New York corporate offices of Hauser Publications, that Vice President and Senior Editor Cy Goldman commissioned Jack Erdogan, a previously unknown writer, to write his first book of a series of how-to books on repairing all kinds of household items. Unbelievable, Jack thought. Ever since I was a kid, I wanted more than anything to be a professional writer. Now here it is, my shot at living the dream. He guessed it was like answering a kind of prayer. Other thoughts flashed through his mind as he briskly walked toward the building. He remembered how, as a kid, he loved writing for the school newspaper. "Look, Pop," he would excitedly show his father. "That's my article featured on the front page, see? Right here, written by Jack Erdogan. That's me, Pop. That's me." His father's response was an impatient grunt as he disapprovingly waved the article aside. "You need to make something good for yourself. I don't want you to grow like me, dumb, stupid, good for nothing." Words he would repeat like a mantra over and over again in his broken accent. Words which, over time, became indelibly seared in Jack's brain. Jack's father escaped to America as a stowaway on a freighter in 1902 to avoid being conscripted into the Turkish army. He was 12 years old. Amid the tumult of longshoremen offloading the freighter at the dock, nobody noticed the boy in the ragged clothes who quietly left the boat, disappearing among the teeming crowds of immigrants in Manhattan's Lower East Side. Jack never knew exactly how he managed to survive, but his father learned English, became a naturalized U.S. citizen, got a job as a busboy in one of New York's most prestigious hotel restaurants, and eventually became its head waiter. None of that mattered. His father always felt lesser than and painfully aware of his never having had anything more than a sixth-grade education. His son would work hard, get a good education, and be successful. Nobody made a living as a writer in the village where his father came from. "Whatever else you do, Jack," Rena, his high school sweetheart, would say, "don't ever give up your dream." After their marriage, Rena did whatever she could to help Jack continue to write. Every night after dinner, she would shoo him off to his desk in the corner of the bedroom of their small apartment. "As soon as I finish the dishes, Jack, I'll be in to finish typing last night's pages. Please try to concentrate on your handwriting, will you, hon? I can hardly decipher some of the hieroglyphics." "Nothing wrong with my handwriting," he growled. "Just put on your glasses." Gosh, honey, you don't have to snap at me. I'm just trying to help. Her voice trailed off. Jack softened. Sorry, Rena. I was way off base. I can't tell you how much your help means to me. I'm really sorry. But the longer they were married, the more frequent his angry, abusive outbursts became. They seemed to erupt out of nowhere whenever she would suggest a different way of doing something. One time, while typing up the pages he had written the night before, she noticed a paragraph she thought was a little ambiguous. Jack, I think this doesn't make too much sense. You might want to look at it this way and kind of say it a little simpler. How about if you... For Pete's sake, Rena, he snapped, cutting her off. I'm the writer. You're the typist, okay? So just type the damn pages. She slammed the handwritten yellow pad on the table. No, you typed them, she shrieked as she ran out of the room. I'm going to bed. Rena, Rena, baby, come back. I'm sorry. Come on, honey. I didn't mean it. Honest, I'm sorry, Rena. Rena? Rena? His voice was now pleading. Sometimes she would angrily respond, letting him know how much his cutting words hurt her. At other times, she would bite her lip and say nothing, stuffing her feelings while she tried to understand what on earth kept setting him off. Jack always felt awful afterwards and would genuinely apologize, but the scars in her feelings began to thicken as the same thing seemed to happen over and over again. When the kids started arriving, Jack welcomed his role of providing for his young family. As a boy, Jack's father's tools were his only toys. He remembered how every Sunday his father would spend his one day off repairing things like the agitator in the Maytag washing machine in the kitchen, or the synchronous motor of the wind-up Victrola in the living room, or the leaky faucet in the bathroom sink, which somehow never seemed to stop leaking. What is licking again? He'd say. I just fixed it 2 weeks ago. His father was always fixing one thing or another in the three-bedroom, one-bathroom house that was home to Jack, his parents, four brothers and a sister, plus his grandfather. Jack was always there helping him. Fixing things became an integral part of the man he would become. When it came time to decide what to do to make a living for his growing family, it seemed only natural that Jack would open a hardware store. Erdogan's Hardware was where he dispensed advice to customers every day on all sorts of home repairs and alteration projects. But Jack never lost track of his childhood dream of writing. Many nights, after working at the hardware store all day and after having dinner with Rena and the children, he would go to his desk to write. Don't stay up too late, Jack, honey, Rena would say as she kissed him goodnight. You work so hard during the day, you'll be exhausted. I'll go to bed whenever I damn please, he snarled. There it was again. More and more, he resented Rena's telling him what to do about anything, no matter how loving her intent. Stop it, Jack, she angrily snapped back. I'm not your enemy. Ah, geez, Rena, I'm sorry. He tried to put his arm around her. She backed away. I'm sorry. Not to worry. I'll be up soon. It was becoming frustrating and increasingly unbearable for Rena, who, more and more, often thought about leaving. Jack frequently would stay up all night, sometimes till the early hours of the mornings, writing articles on how to repair things. Every article ended with his sincere belief that just about anybody could repair just about anything. After completing each article, he methodically sent it to his list of do-it-yourself book and magazine publishers and waited. He had a drawer full of form letter responses. They invariably began, Dear Mr. Erdogan, thank you for submitting your article, and ended with the inevitable blah, 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 blah. In other words, thanks, but no thanks. Sometimes he wondered whether a real person ever actually read his submissions. It was as a result of sending one of his articles, Repairing That Leaky Faucet Once and For All, to You Can Do It, one of House's publications magazines, that he came to the attention of Cy Goldman. The editor-in-chief was immediately impressed with Jack's friendly, uncomplicated style of writing when explaining his simple, unique way of repairing things. This time, rather than a reject letter, Jack got a personal letter from Cy Goldman himself, inviting him to his office in New York to discuss the possibility of developing a series of do-it-yourself books. His initial meeting with Mr. Goldman went really well. "Okay, kid, I really like your article. You definitely seem to have a flair for this stuff and a nice, easy style in explaining things." Jack couldn't believe what he was hearing. Except for Rena, he never heard such genuine praise for his writing. "Get me an outline for a general book on repairing common household items, and write me a sample chapter. I want to see whether you're a one-shot genius or can write an entire book." The editor-in-chief paused. "Or maybe a series of books." "Yes, sir, Mr. Goldman." Jack vigorously shook Goldman's hand. "Thank you so much. I'll get to work on it right away. Thank you, thank you." Jack submitted the outline and sample chapter 2 weeks later. Goldman liked what he saw and took the next step, setting up several weekly meetings in which they worked closely on developing the details of the first book and subsequent series. Goldman reviewed Jack's weekly efforts with growing enthusiasm. "Great job, Jack." How Jack wished he could have heard these words from his father in earlier days. "This is turning out really well. Help yourself to the coffee and try the Danish. They're terrific. I have them sent up from the coffee shop on the corner. Those Greeks really know how to make a great Danish." On March 20th, he would never forget that day, Jack received a registered letter from Hauser Publications. He ripped it open, scanned the contents quickly, then cried out, "Holy smokes, Rena, come here quick, look!" It was a contract to publish Fixing Things, How Just About Anyone Can Fix Just About Anything, by Jack Erdogan, Book 1. They were shaking so hard they could hardly hold the cover letter steady enough to read it. "Dear Mr. Erdogan," it started, "kindly review the enclosed contract carefully, and if acceptable, sign and return it by April 1st. At the bottom of the contract, over the signature line, in capital letters, Jack read the words, "Time is of the essence. Completed manuscript must be submitted for publication by no later than April 30th. Hauser was planning an October 1st release date. The April 30th deadline was critical to the publishers having adequate time to produce the book, get it reviewed, and to have it in bookstores ready for the Christmas season. Time was short, but Jack had already worked out most of the contents during those meetings with his editor. "I can do it, Rena. I know I can." He grabbed the pen, and under Rena's proud, smiling eyes, Jack signed the contract. They were floating on air as they drove to the post office to send the contract back to the publisher by registered mail. On May 2nd, at 7:45 in the morning, as Jack backed out of his driveway for the grueling 2-hour drive, the cloudless, clear blue skies easily allowed the beaming sun to bathe the landscaped homes of southern Connecticut in a brilliance that mirrored Jack's bright, all's right with the world feeling. Just over 2 hours later, in the industrial wastelands of Secaucus, New Jersey, that same sunlight was fighting a losing battle as it struggled to find a path through the densely shrouded air. Jack just about jumped out of his car for the short walk to the pollution-stained building. He could hardly keep himself from projecting the way his life was about to change. Then, all of a sudden, his euphoria and the miniature electric shocks, which were having a field day darting around in his stomach, morphed into a strange uneasiness. His recent telephone conversation with Cy Goldman started repeating itself in his head. He had called the editor-in-chief to say he needed a couple of more days to complete the manuscript. "Okay, Jack." Why the strange hesitation? "Come in as soon as you can," and hung up. He sounds really irritated. Jack remembered being stunned by his cold, abrupt manner. Was this the same Cy Goldman with whom he brainstormed every week over coffee and Danish, sometimes even kidding around like friends? Jack stood there for a long time, the telephone still in his hand. Finally, he slowly hung up the phone. It took all of his inner strength to jolt himself loose from feeling cowed by Cy Goldman's vaguely threatening manner. He told himself over and over again, "It'll be okay. It'll probably only be a couple of days after the deadline. It's not that late. Something else must have been bugging him when I called. 2 days, what's the big deal? Nah, it'll be okay. Didn't Cy Goldman tell him to come in? Yeah, sure he did. It would be okay. Now, as he entered the building, Jack was suddenly feeling tense and unsure of himself. He took the elevator to Hauser Publications' production offices on the first floor. The elevator opened onto a lobby area. Jack walked toward the reception desk a few feet away. The receptionist was busily working at the computer. She looked up. The stacks of papers on her right and the computer monitor on her left seemed to frame her face. Jack guessed she was, maybe in her 50s. Her hair was sort of reddish, and her delicate Celtic features were beginning to reveal the passing years.
"Well, you must be Mr. Erdogan. I'm Mary Cummings."
She stood, held out her hand, and smiled broadly.
"Welcome to Hauser Publications. We've been expecting you. Please have a seat. I'll let Mr. Goldman know you're here."
Jack returned her smile. Thank you very much." He walked a few steps toward two leather chairs flanking a square, solid oak table. Recent copies of You Can Do It were neatly stacked under the heavy bronze base lamp. The rekindled electric shocks were tingling again in his stomach. He was remembering when he first sent his article to You Can Do It magazine. Jack took a deep breath as he sat down on one of the cushy leather chairs, placing the large brown envelope with his baby inside next to the magazines on the table. Glancing up at the framed publications on the wall, he noticed Mark Laubman's Plumbing Made Easy, and right next to it, Danny Otis's Hobbyist Guide to Cabinet Making, and Cecil Benjiker's Staining Wood, Everything You Need to Know, and Steve Jackson's Home Alterations, Helpful Hints, and Harvey Hunter's Basic Constructions. My God, there they are, he gasped, barely audibly, spinning his head around to be sure no one had heard him. The Bibles of every do-it-yourself enthusiast in the country. Jack had read every one of them. Wow, how great it was going to be to see Jack Erdogan's fixing things up there next to those giants. Mary Cummings was walking toward him. They're ready for you now, Mr. Erdogan. She spoke with a lilting, song-like voice. Jack snatched his baby off the table, bolted out of his chair, tightly clenching the large brown envelope. She opened the door, the one just to the right of where Jack had been sitting, and motioned for him to go in. Cy Goldman greeted him, hand outstretched.
"Well, welcome, Jack. Come in, please."
There were several other people in the room.
"Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for Jack Erdogan, our newest member of the family."
The room burst into courteous, perfunctory applause.
"Jack, now that they know who you are, I want you to meet the people who'll be producing your manuscript and transforming it into a first-class Hauser publication."
Cy Goldman was his usual friendly self again. Jack could feel his confidence beginning to return. "Yeah, everything's okay." His heart was beating wildly in his chest. His head felt like it was detached from the rest of his body. "Calm down," he told himself. Missing the April 30 deadline was not a problem. Everything's okay. But Jack now knew a different Cy Goldman, the one on the phone that day who was also capable of an impersonal, detached abruptness. He suspected that Cy Goldman's cordiality was more posed than real, masking the knife-edged businessman beneath the surface. An errant thought broke through, adding to Jack's nervousness. "Oh, jeez, I sure hope he doesn't talk to me like that again." For as long as he could remember, Jack resisted being told what to do. It seems he was driven to do everything his way, and he particularly hated being corrected. Maybe it all started back when he was a kid. Jack had received almost daily beatings for not doing what his parents told him to do. At those times, their respective cultural background dictated only one way to discipline. He could still feel the searing pain of his father's 54-inch belt, or sometimes its buckle, when he was really disobedient.
Crack! Crack! Crack!
The lashes ripped onto his skin.
"You do what you're told, you hear? Crack! Do what your mother tell you, crack! Stop your crying now, you hear? Stop your crying, I really give you something for to cry about. Crack! Crack! Crack!"
The last ones were always the hardest and most painful. God, it hurt. Why am I always doing everything wrong? I can be right sometimes too, can't I? Why does it always have to be their way? He felt shamed and powerless by the beatings, or lickings as they used to call them. which either one or the other of his parents gave him almost daily. During those beatings, he would try to conceal his sobs, repeating to himself over and over, "Nobody's ever going to tell me what to do anymore. Never. And nobody's ever going to give me a licking again. I'll do what I want, and only what I want. You'll see." As an adult, Jack's singular driving purpose was to never be controlled by anyone ever again. The great house in Connecticut, the successful business, all of it had meaning for one reason and one reason alone: to prove to himself every single day that he, Jack Erdogan, the cowering wimp of his childhood, could be somebody and get whatever he wanted by doing things his way. Rena would never forget that day when the Stanley Tools sales rep stopped by the store for one of his regular visits.
"Hey, Jack, great to see you."
They shook hands.
"Thanks for your orders. Boy, they keep coming in like clockwork. Man, you got to be doing something pretty damn right. Your store is always full of customers, like now. I wish my other dealers were this busy. I don't mind telling you, you're my best account."
Jack was beaming. "Thanks, man. I just do what I do."
Jack, he started slowly, "the company is instituting a new policy with all of its dealers, you know, to kind of help them plan production and all that."
What do you mean, instituting?" Jack interrupted. "You're going to start telling me how to run my business now?" Jack could feel his muscles tensing up.
Nah, nothing like that, Jack."
He was treading softly. He didn't want to set him off. "I just need for you to project your orders for the year, that's all. You know, 12 months in advance so the factory can plan their production. You don't have to do it now." Jack cut him off.
"Damn right I don't have to do it now. How about never?"
Jack's voice was getting louder and louder with each word.
"You tell your damn company to shove it. Nobody tells me, Jack Erdogan, what to do, ever. It's my business. I'll run it my way."
Jack was yelling so loud now Rena could hear every terrifying word in the back office.
"I'll order what I want, when I want, not when you want. I don't give a rat's ass what your company wants."
Rena came running from the back office, screaming at him, Jack,
stop your hollering. He's just doing his job. You've no right to abuse him that way."
The customers quickly left the store.
"Shut up, Rena."
Jack's face twisted with rage.
"I'll talk to him any way I want to. Nobody tells me what to do, ever. Nobody. You hear? Nobody, not even you."
Rena stopped short as she burst into uncontrollable sobs. The floodgates, which had dammed her emotions for too long, suddenly swung wide open, offering no resistance to the salty tears cascading down her cheeks. She ran out of the store. When Jack came home that night, Rena did not come to the door to greet him with her usual warm, welcoming hug. Instead, she asked him to come into the kitchen and sit down. Then, in a low, measured voice, she said, "Jack, listen to me very carefully. For too long now, I've watched you change from the warm, wonderful, loving husband and father you are into some kind of raging monster I don't even recognize." Jack's face grew ashen white. "When you're like that, Jack, you drive everyone away. Businessmen, customers, me, the children, everyone. And this afternoon, Jack," her voice was elevating in a piercing crescendo with each word, "you tell me, shut up.
Me, Jack, shut up. Me, shut up."
She paused to keep her voice from breaking. She continued now, almost whispering, "I don't know how to help this one, Jack. It's not correcting your spelling or grammar or run-on sentences, no. It's way beyond anything I can do. You're going to have to figure something out here, Jack. But I tell you this, I will not put up with your hateful ragers anymore. I love you, Jack, but if you ever, ever speak to me like that again, like this afternoon, I will pack up, kids and all, and I will leave you, Jack. Do you understand, Jack? I will leave." Jack was beside himself with a suffocating feeling of sadness. "Rena, I don't know what happens to me when I get so angry. I can't seem to keep it in.
It comes out before I even know it. I wouldn't hurt you for anything. You're the best thing that ever happened to me. I never stopped wanting to hold you, to kiss you, to make love to you, to hear you laugh, to see the light in your beautiful eyes at the littlest gift, even if it's just a bunch of grocery store flowers. Ever since we started going together in high school, sweetheart, all I've ever wanted to do was to make you happy. His voice was beginning to catch in his throat. Please, please, Rena. Please, don't leave. He had to stop again to keep his voice from breaking up. I think something's not right with me, Rena. I don't know what. But whatever it is I got to do to fix it, Rena, he stopped again. I swear to you, I'll do it. Rena looked coldly at him. Your dinner's on the stove, she said in a voice drained of any feeling or emotion. I'm going upstairs. Please stay down here tonight, Jack. Sleep on the couch, go to a motel, whatever. I don't much care. I need some time away from you for now. His empty eyes followed her as she went up the stairs to the bedroom. The next day, Jack did not go directly to the store. Instead, he found an anger management group where for almost a year, twice a week, he heard himself described over and over again as people in the group told their experiences, which, almost to the person, were his experiences. First, he just went to listen. Then, after a few times, he became an active participant in the discussions, learning things about himself he could never have imagined. He could feel his life changing as the rages slowly diminished, both in frequency and in intensity. He was feeling happiness for the first time in his life, and he finally felt free of the uncontrollable rages which had plagued him for most of his adult life. And now his book was about to be published. No, no, Jack Erdogan was not powerless. Jack Erdogan was not dumb, stupid, good for nothing. Jack Erdogan was feeling sure of himself again. He stood straighter than usual as each of the top professionals in the publishing industry introduced himself. The overweight guy sitting next to Cy Goldman began. Hey, Jack, Lou Ippolito, content editor. I'm the guy who'll be making sure your stuff isn't a lot of BS. Jack had read about him. He was a civil engineer with many years in the construction industry and had the edge to prove it. The copy editor was next. Hi, Jack. I'm Lois Santi. At least she was smiling. I'll be tightening things up, although having read your article, I'm glad our other writers don't write as well as you or I'd be out of a job. Everyone chuckled. Frank Rivera, production supervisor. I'm the guy that makes sure the book is completed on schedule, he snarled. I could have really used those extra 2 days. The graphic designer and photographer were next. Hiya, Jerry Gilbert. I'll be doing cover design, illustrations, layout, pagination, like that. Serge Bialy here. Photographs are needed. That's me. Jason Edwards, the director of marketing. Your book will be getting a full-blown rollout this fall with exposure and distribution through brick-and-mortar retailers as well as e-commerce booksellers. I'm Alice Higgins, Public Relations. I'm looking forward to working with you, Jack. She seemed genuinely bubbly and excited. We've already begun setting up interviews, press releases, and bookstore signings. You're going to be one busy author. John Esposito here is warehouse supervisor. We take care of the shipping, order fulfillment. Hey, I'm hoping we got to put on extra help to handle the orders. Good luck. Jack was really feeling sure of himself now. Holy smokes, what a rush. All these people, all of them working on my book. He could feel his heart thumping in his chest, competing with the tingling darts of electricity in his stomach. Okay, Jack, let's see what you got. Cy Goldman snapped, sitting off to the side. Jack took his baby out of the brown envelope. The double-spaced pages were bound with a large black spring clip holding them together. It was pretty thick. He handed a second copy to Cy Goldman so he could follow along. He tried to imagine he was talking to his customers at Erdogan's hardware store. What I've tried to do here, Jack began cautiously, is to assume the reader has no prior knowledge. So in addition to a very descriptive table of contents in which I briefly summarize each chapter, I've included a detailed, completely cross-referenced index
to help the reader find things easily, a glossary of what may be unfamiliar words used in the various chapters, and what I call a tool dictionary of names, pictures, and descriptions of every tool referred to in the book. I'll need a bunch of photos here, Serge, okay? Serge nodded. Jack was on a roll. The eyes of everyone in the room were fixed on him, Jack Erdogan. Their concentrated attention nourished his sense of himself. His stomach finally relaxed, and his heartbeat revisited its normal, quiet rhythm. His composure was now completely in tow as he continued to summarize each chapter in the book in a self-confident tone of voice. "Now, I'll need illustrations in these sections, Jerry," he said, directing his comments to the graphics designer as he described how to hang pictures on a drywall and how to rewire a lamp plug and how to securely fasten a garden hose rack to a stucco wall without cracking the stucco. "Got you covered, Jack. And here's where I'll need some what I call before, during, and after photos." He was talking to Serge, describing those chapters dealing with taking squeaks out of hardwood floors and replacing washers on leaky plumbing fixtures and so on. I may already have some photos on file, Jack. If not, I'll take some new ones. No worries. Everyone was taking notes as fast as they could as Jack meticulously covered every aspect of his book. He was speaking nonstop for well over an hour, his enthusiasm building with each word. When he finished the presentation, he smiled respectfully. "Thanks for your interest, everybody. You have any questions?" The content editor responded enthusiastically. "No, Jack, I think you explained everything terrific. I think we're going to have one hell of a book here. Congratulations." Bingo, Jack thought, clenching his teeth together to hide his almost overwhelming excitement. "Hey, thanks a lot, Lou. Now, I sure hope you don't find any BS in there." A collective wave of laughter started to develop, then nonchalantly disappear. "Mr. Goldman," he continued, "I'm so grateful to you for giving me this opportunity. Thank you." Jack was too excited to pay any attention to Cy Goldman's set jaw and his tacit response. "And thanks to all of you," he went on, "for letting me become part of your team." The room literally burst with spontaneous applause as everyone, that is, except Cy Goldman, jumped to their feet for a standing ovation. They really liked Jack and his book. He couldn't wait to start working with him. He was on the high of his life. They all sat down and turned to Cy Goldman for his comments. Goldman's face was rigid. His lips hardly moved. "Jack," he started slowly as he leafed through the pages of his copy of the manuscript. Damn, there was that knife-edge tone in his voice again. Jack could feel his spine stiffen as his spirits precipitously fell like a rock. "Did you not understand me when I told you several times in our weekly meetings the book needed to be 160 pages? He didn't wait for a response. "You've got 179 pages here, Jack. I specifically told you I wanted you to give me a 160-page, 9x11, softcover book. Did you not hear me, Jack?" A simmering anger began to reveal itself in Goldman's demeanor and the level of his voice. Jack sheepishly replied, Yes, I heard you, Mr. Goldman, but see," he blurted, "all those extra things I included, I think they really add to the book and make it unique, like the tool dictionary and the complete glossary and the extended summarized table of contents and detailed cross-reference index. They're all really important, all of them. They're really important." He suddenly was sounding like a whining adolescent. "You see, I couldn't cover everything we worked out in our meetings, plus include those innovations that make it happen in the 160 pages you wanted." His voice suddenly started to elevate. "All those innovations are what makes my book unique. I've read your other Hauser books, you know. Not one of them, not a one, has anything like the tool dictionary or glossary. No. It's my book, written the way I want to write it. So the 179 pages needs to be okay? Jack was now coming from a totally different, unrelated, completely inappropriate place in his head. It would not have made any difference to him, even if he were aware, which he wasn't, of the economics of publishing. Web presses print 16 pages at a time, called a signature. In order to efficiently control the printing costs, books in this format must always be of a page length that's a multiple of 16, ergo, on 60 pages. An additional 19 pages significantly increased the printing cost by the expense of one additional signature, to say nothing of the special handling required to print three additional pages.
Okay, okay. No, it's not okay, Goldman bellowed. We specify book length for a reason, Jack. I budgeted for a 160-page book. I specified a 160-page book, and a 160-page book is what I expect from you, damn it. Not 179. This is a business, Jack. When I say 160 pages, it means exactly that, 160 pages. First, you're 2 days late with the finished manuscript. The deadline was April 30th. That wasn't bad enough. Now you bring me a book 19 damn pages longer than I emphatically told you not to give me. There it was, that sharp, controlling, dismissive tone. Take the book home, Jack. Shorten it to 160 pages and be damn sure you get it back to me by no later than 3 o'clock tomorrow. You got that, Jack? 160 pages, 3 o'clock tomorrow, and don't be late again.
Who the hell did he think he was talking to? Once again, he could feel the sharp, tearing pain, as though his skin was beginning to rip open from the cutting lashes of his rigid demand and the tone with which it was discharged. Jack felt himself getting red in the face, his whole body tense, ready to take the next crack of the belt. He cried out, hollering at the top of his lungs, to the blurred figure now towering, or so it seemed, before his eyes.
Listen to me, Mr. Goldman. I don't know who you think you're talking to or who you think you are, but nobody, nobody, you hear? No, nobody talks to me like that anymore, you hear, Mr. Goldman? Not me. Not to me, Jack Erdogan.
He was screaming now with a strangely familiar voice.
If I could have written the book in 160 pages, like you wanted, he stammered like a little child. I would have. The book I wanted to write has 179 pages. You got that? You got that, Mr. Goldman? 179 pages. That's it.
There he was, vintage Jack, convulsing with rage.
If you don't want to publish the book, I'll do it myself. You got that, Mr. Goldman? I don't need you. I'll publish it myself.
The room was filled with a blank silence as the totally incomprehensible turn of events exploded before the disbelieving eyes of its occupants. No one moved. No one breathed. The air in the room hung heavy with an oppressive thickness, not unlike that of the air hovering in suspension over a funeral pyre. Goldman glared at Jack with narrow, stony eyes, slammed the manuscript down on the floor, spun around, and stormed out of the meeting. The room was transfixed in stillness and a chilling quiet. Lou Ippolito slowly got up from his chair, walked toward Jack, quietly picked up the manuscript from the floor, took a long look at Jack, and finally broke the frozen silence in the room. "Let me look this over, Jack." His words were deliberate, his voice more like a whisper, his manner almost patronizing. "I'll call you in the morning and let you know what we decide, and thanks for coming in." Ippolito turned toward the door and left the room. The others quickly followed, heads down, not giving Jack so much as a passing glance. Jack stood there, alone in the empty room, trembling and dumbfounded. This sudden eruption of rage had exploded like the detonation of a buried landmine triggered by an inadvertent footfall. He jammed his lifeless baby into the brown envelope. Jack couldn't get out of there fast enough, the remnants of his rage still agitating every nerve end in his body as he charged out of the room, brown envelope clenched in his hand. Mary Cummings did not look up as he passed her desk to get to the elevator. He damn near tripped on a crack in the pavement as he blindly ran to the truck, climbed in, turned on the ignition, slammed the gear shift into drive, and burned rubber, screeching out of the parking lot into the highway. The book was great. It was. Everybody loved it. I heard their applause. I saw the standing ovation. He was muttering to himself. Damn Goldman, anyway. Yeah, he's the editor. Okay. But I'm the writer. I write what I want and how I want. The speedometer was pushing 95 as he rocketed down the New Jersey Turnpike. If they don't want it, I'll publish it myself. Yeah, companies that help you do that, I heard. Yeah. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to publish it myself. Hey, wait a minute, he thought. He was starting to calm down. Ippolito really liked the book. Geez, he really did. Maybe he'll talk to Goldman, talk some sense into him. Yeah, he really liked the book. Of course, that's it. That's why Ippolito wanted to keep it. Jack was feeling a lot better now that he thought he sort of figured it out. Okay, I get it now. Goldman was just playing boss. Sure, that was it. Ippolito said it was a hell of a book. Yeah, Ippolito will talk to him. Jack turned into his driveway. He was exhausted.
Jack, honey, tell me quick. How did it go? I want to hear everything.
She threw her arms around him, hugging him. Tell me, honey. She was so excited.
Yeah, they loved it, Rena. Yeah. They had everybody there, and they even gave me a standing ovation.
She heard the words, but something didn't sound right. He just couldn't bring himself to tell her what really happened. Besides, after tomorrow, he rationalized, when Ippolito calls to say they're going to go ahead, I'll tell her then. Rita decided not to press him.
Oh, I'm exhausted, sweetheart. It's been a long day. I'm going to take a nap.
Wake me when dinner's ready, okay? He went up to the bedroom and collapsed on the bed. During dinner, Jack hardly said a word. Rena definitely did not have a good feeling. Oh, God, she worried. Did something happen? She remembered that day when the Stanley Tool salesman refused to listen to his abuse and stomped out of the store. Jack's customers often wondered why Erdogan's Hardware was not a Stanley Tools dealer anymore. No, something was definitely not right. They went to bed early. The next morning, they had just finished breakfast, and Jack was about to leave for the store when the doorbell rang. Jack opened the door.
Hey, good morning, Jack. Got an overnight FedEx delivery for you. Must be pretty important, huh?
Yeah, thanks. Where do I sign?
Right here, Jack.
Jack scribbled his name.
Great. Have a nice day.
He and Rena went into the dining room and sat down at the table. Jack opened the envelope slowly and pulled out his manuscript attached to a letter from the corporate office of Hauser Publications. In a low, unsteady voice, he read it out loud so Rena could hear.
Dear Mr. Erdogan, be advised that your contractual obligation, as clearly defined in contract between us dated March 20th and signed by you on April 1st, was to submit your completed manuscript by no later than April 30th. By submitting your manuscript on May 2nd, you have materially breached said contractual obligation, wherefore you are hereby notified that said contract shall effective immediately be deemed null and void, and Hauser Publications shall be under no further obligation to publish the work described in said aforementioned contract. Your submitted manuscript is returned and closed herewith. Very truly yours, Cy Goldman, Editor-in-Chief, with a copy to the legal department. Oh, Jack, Rena gently touched his shoulder. What happened? In almost a whisper, he answered. Same old thing, Rena. Goldman started hollering at me. I saw red. I just lost it. He looked down at his manuscript, staring at the title, Fixing Things, how just about anybody can fix just about anything. His saddened eyes looked up to meet hers, tears gently sliding down her cheeks. He slowly murmured. It was almost inaudible. Maybe there are some things that just can't be fixed, Rena.
No, Jack, don't ever say that. I know you. You can fix anything. She tenderly cradled his face in both her hands, looked deeply into his watery eyes. In a warmly caressing voice, she whispered, Jack, I've seen you do it before, sweetheart. You can fix this, I know it.
He met her loving gaze, and after a long, painful moment, he answered, his voice now hardly audible, I'm going to keep trying, Rena. I'm going to keep trying. Once and for all, I'm going to fix me.
That was Bakersfield author Nelson Varin reading Fixing Things. Well, as we heard, Jack, the lead character in tonight's story, had two overriding goals in life. The first was to be a writer, and the second, to be able to fix and repair things around the house. As far as the first goal was concerned, he spent many hours practicing how to write while his ever-so-patient wife did the typing. And as far as his fixing things were concerned, well, he ran a very successful hardware store and indeed seemed to be able to help people very much. But then there was this tragic flaw in his personality that somehow managed to ruin everything. He was just not able to take directions, just couldn't stand to have anybody tell him what to do. And so now here he gets an actual offer to get published. You can imagine what that means to a prospective author, but absolutely blows it because he can't adhere to the publisher's instructions. Of course, like so many of us, he has an excuse. He blames it all on his parents for punishing him severely as a child. It's only at the very end of the story that he seems to realize what his real problem is, and he tells his wife, "I'm going to keep trying, Rena, and once and for all try to fix me." We wish him well. Folks, our author tonight, Nelson Varin, resides in Bakersfield. He's an accomplished organist who has authored numerous books and articles dealing with how to play the organ. As a matter of fact, he actually composed and recorded the incidental music that we're using on tonight's show. And that's not all. Nelson submitted tonight's story, then in its infancy, a year ago, at which time it was not selected. But he didn't give up on it. He rewrote it, and as you heard this year, it made the cut. Congratulations, Nelson, and thanks for such a meaningful narrative. You know, I just have a feeling that Nelson is working on another story for us for next year. Certainly hope so. And so we come to the end of another edition of Valley Writers Read. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to listen to tonight's or any other Valley Writers Read story, just go online to kvpr.org and link up with archived audio. Next week, two short stories, one by Marilyn Larson, the other by Deborah Hamilton. In the meantime, this is your host, Franz Weinschenk, wishing you and yours a great life story until we meet again. Good night.
Valley Writers Read is a production of Valley Public Radio, produced by Don Weaver and Franz Weinschenk. Please join us again next Wednesday at 7 p.m. for another edition of Valley Writers Read.